Hey guys, I'm Eric McLean.
And I'm Kelly Gramlich. It's time to talk some ACC sports.
Let's go!
Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome to 2021. Very excited to be in 2021. 2020, you ain't got to go home, but you got to get the heck out of here. All right, get on.
Is it a little bit strange that we're in the year 2021, like W-O-N, like 2020 beat us? Kind of weird.
I didn't even think about that, Mac.
It's a little strange.
Wow.
I kind of noticed that, and I was like, dang, I guess it beat all of us. But here we are. We made it through. We got some big football games to talk about.
That's right. It didn't beat us because we're here. It beat us down, but we made it, and we get some great football on the first day of 2021, which I think is a good omen going forward. And we have two ACC teams, at least for now, two ACC teams to discuss today. Alabama, Notre Dame, the Cotton, Rose Bowl, Parade of Cowboys. I love the Parade of Cowboys. That is so good, Mac. And then, of course, Clemson, Ohio State in the Sugar Bowl. We're going to keep this. We're going to do our best. Keep this episode about 30 minutes, and we're just going to break down X's and O's because we did a lot of kind of big picture stuff with Andrea and David, which was excellent. If you missed that podcast, go back and listen to it as well because they were so good. But this is going to be X's and O's score predictions, breaking down these playoff games. I am pumped, Mac.
I am too. It's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get into it, guys, I want to tell you about our good friends over at Sunshine Beverages. Feel good energy. It's that perfect pick-me-up. It sparkles with vitamins, electrolytes, and only has 70 milligrams of natural caffeine. And guess what? It's sourced from organic green coffee beans. It's delicious flavors. You've got the blueberry lemonade, clementine twist, gingerberry. You can't go wrong with any of those three. Sunshine offers a balanced boost with great taste and better for you ingredients. You guys can find Sunshine at your local Publix or just go to drinkthesunshine.com and use our code ACC10 for 10% off at checkout. That's drinkthesunshine.com. Sunshine, that feel good energy.
Feel good energy. Mac, you know, one of the trends with both of our friends, our friend groups, is that all these crazy people our age seem to be having children. I don't know why, but
<That's right. laughs>
our good friend, Zach Orr, mutual friend, he messaged me. He said, I need some of that sunshine. So I sent him because his baby is due soon. And I'm saying, yeah. You're going to need that, my man. You're going to need that. So I'll report
In-laws,
back.
Babies coming, whatever you need. Sunshine will get you through it.
Exactly. All right, Mac, let's start with number one Alabama versus number four Notre Dame. This is a 4 p.m. kickoff today. It's the earlier game in the Rose, Cotton, whatever bowl. Alabama, 81% FPI, still a 19.5 point favorite. Before we jump into this game, Mac, a couple days ago, we saw Florida just get boat raced by Oklahoma. Does that tell you anything about what to expect from Alabama, considering Florida's defense gave up 600 yards to Oklahoma? I know Alabama's offense is great. I really do. But I also knew they were great a couple years ago. And it just seems that some of these SEC defenses, I know this sounds crazy, but these SEC defenses don't seem to be built to slow down Alabama. And they just run all over the SEC. And then when they get in the playoff, sometimes they don't look as good. But what do you make of this offense, especially Devontae Smith, Najee Harris, and Mac Jones?
Yeah, well, for starters, when you look at that Florida game and you know, everybody kept saying, you know, so many guys are out, so many. I get that. I totally get it. But I don't think there are too many guys out on defense. And they put up record-setting yards, Oklahoma did. I think record points in the Cotton Bowl. So it's very interesting to see. Now, sure, motivation, you can say all that. Things happen quickly, and then maybe some guys checked out. Sure, this is the playoff. That's not going to happen. So I think everybody's going to come to play, but you look at what, you know, Oklahoma was able to do to that team defensively, you know, scoring in bunches. You look what, you know, they were able to do against Alabama. So maybe this team, you know, defensively just, they aren't who they used to be, you know, right? When you look at Nick Saban's defenses, he took so much pride in just shutting everything down, being this dominant, you know, brute force. And then he kind of switched. You know, he saw that people, like Andrea said, were just excelling so quickly on offense. I mean, I remember Kelly way back in the day, like 2012, when, you know, Nick Saban was complaining about the hurry up offense, about, you know, going fast, saying it's bad for the game, it's dangerous for people. And yet here we are with one of the quickest, most explosive offenses in the country. So it's funny how things change. You look at all those offensive weapons that you just spoke about with Devonta Smith. I mean, he is one of the best wide receivers I think that we have ever seen. The picture perfect body, a guy that can just go up, do anything in the route tree, blow by you for big gains. He's second in the country with touchdown receptions. He's first in the country in yards by a huge margin. I think it's like 400 yards. So it's interesting to see what if he would have had, you know, 15 games to compile all this stuff. I mean, how legendary of a year would this have been? And then you look at the run game, a guy that really not nobody talks about because this guy's that good, but he's kind of in the back burner a little bit. He's kind of number three, if you will, you know, when you talk about players. And it's kind of similar to Travis Etienne. Like, you have all these stars around you, and then it's like, oh, by the way, we have the nation's leading rushing touchdown scorer as well. So it's just a load of talent. Mac Jones, obviously very capable, third in the country in passing touchdowns, second in the country in passing yards. So Notre Dame is going to have to figure out a way to slow these guys down. I don't think you can stop them. I don't think we will see, you know, that UNC-type performance from Notre Dame where they're able to just shut it down. I think these guys are too good and have too many answers up front that, you know, probably starts with a really, really good offensive line. But what Notre Dame can hang their hat on pretty much every game except for two against one of the best teams in the country has been unbelievable defense. You know, they have some really good pieces. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, Kyle Hamilton at safety, who I think is one of the best in the country. Those guys can provide you with unique solutions on defense. You know, Alabama faces you with all these problems. Here's two great answers right here. These two guys, how can you get them in space? How can you get them in opportunities to win? And that's what's going to be fun to see. Now, I think a big key defensively for Notre Dame is you have to make Mac Jones uncomfortable. You have to get him moving. You have to get his eyes down, looking at where your defense is coming instead of up scanning the field for all these wide receivers just running free. So whether that's blitzing those two guys I just mentioned, when are you going to do it? Because you got to think Alabama's going to go right behind you with a slant, with an RPO. They're going to throw it to where you come from. So how are they going to take those risks? Guys like Drew White, Shane Simpson, big linebackers are going to have to step up. And then up front, you know, Dalen Hayes leading that defensive line, when they don't bring more than four, those guys have to get pressure. And so I think when it all comes down to it, defensively, you've got to make Mac uncomfortable. And then offensively, quickly, we'll move on to you know, Clemson, Ohio State. I think that the best thing that you can do for your defense is control the ball and hold on to that ball. If you're able to move it, if you're able to use your monster offensive line, your big tight ends out on the edge, and then a superstar running back in Kyren Williams, if you're able to move the ball like you have all season long against really anybody, I think you have a chance to make this competitive. Now, it would have to be their best performance of the season to do so, which isn't crazy. I mean, it's not to say they can't, but it looks very unlikely that they're able to win this football game.
Here's a positive that I see for Notre Dame. I think the two quarterbacks that have given them the most trouble this season, Trevor Lawrence and honestly, Malik Cunningham from Louisville. And what I've seen from both those two quarterbacks is they're serious threats in the run game. When it was just DJ Uiagalelei, and we know DJ wasn't as comfortable running the zone read and all those types of things, they were able to slow down Clemson. But when Trevor Lawrence got in there, Trevor Lawrence is reading the defense perfectly. He's giving the ball to Etienne. He's keeping it at the right time. And that's really what killed Notre Dame. So the fact that Mac Jones is not mobile, I think that is a positive. Because when Notre Dame can just line up with at all three levels and just kind of play, you know, each position the way they want to and not have to deal with the trickery from the quarterback in the run game, I think that will help them. Do you buy that, Mac?
No, yeah, I think that's a great point. The only kicker that I'm interested to see is this is going to be the best offensive line that Notre Dame has seen. Now, obviously, you know, we used to say this about Clemson all the time, is we go against the best defense, the best defensive line every day in practice. Notre Dame's defense practices against one of, if not the best, offensive line every single day. So they've seen it, but not in a game. And so I don't know how much of a difference that will make. If those guys, if like I said, Big Dalen and Okendigi, if they're able to hold a point and not just get mowed off the line and get to those linebackers, White and Simon, if they're able to do that, then I agree with you. I think that they're able to line up, and it's going to be an old school type of game because you look at two great defenses, two great offensive lines, run games, et cetera. But it's just that piece where the RPO and the receivers that are going to be screaming, you know, right behind all that run action, can Notre Dame hold up? But again, they've done it against North Carolina. It's very similar offenses. Do I think North Carolina is on the same level as Alabama? Not quite yet, but they've seen the blueprint, and Notre Dame has the blueprint to stopping that type of offense.
And here's the thing, too. Alabama's defense is a weakness for them. They're going to give up points. I think Notre Dame is going to score. So for me, it comes down to, like you said, Mac, game control. Can Notre Dame's offense stay on the field? Can they really do what they did against Clemson, dominate the ball? And then the other key for me, which is the key for most underdogs in football, is you got to force turnovers. You've got to find a way to force turnovers, because this Alabama offense, they have yet to score less than 40 since their opener, since the Missouri game. So if they score over 40, I think this is probably a wrap. If Notre Dame can find a way to hold them to 42, 41, 40, 38, it's a ball game. But to do that, you've got to force turnovers, in my opinion.
I agree. And doing that's obviously going to be, you know, easier said than done. And another guy, you know, we talk about best game, best performance. Ian Book's going to have to play out of his mind. I mean, he's a mobile quarterback. He can extend plays. When you look at who's given Bama fits in the past, historically, it's been quarterbacks that can move. So there is opportunity there for Notre Dame. You know, I went originally coming into this game, I was just like, man, that there's no shot. But when you dive into it, when you look at it, there's some key pieces that they can keep it interesting. And if they play the best game of their careers, there's a chance.
All right, Mac, let's get to it here. Score prediction. I'll go ahead and give mine first. Okay, I'll let you be the closer here. So as I've said, I think, you know, you're not going to hold Bama under 40. Unless you force a crazy amount of turnovers, which Notre Dame has shown that capability. You talk about Kyle Hamilton, but I'm just not sure they're going to be able to do that. That being said, I think Alabama's defense is just not very good. So if Notre Dame comes to play, I think they can score points, and I think they will score points. So some people might be shocked by this, but my score prediction for today's Cotton Rose Bowl is Alabama 45, Notre Dame 31. I think Notre Dame scores points. I think they keep it somewhat close, but I also could see Notre Dame scoring at the end and making it a little closer, but I don't believe in Alabama's defense. And I think Notre Dame's going to be ready to go. They've heard so much crap about themselves for the last couple weeks. And I've got to believe that Brian Kelly is going to make some adjustments to allow them to play better offensively. That being said, Mac, you just laughed at my score prediction. So what is yours for Alabama-Notre Dame?
I laugh because it's so close to mine, because it's so similar.
Oh, good.
I think it's going to be closer than the spread. You know, I'm thinking like 45 to 35. I think that Notre Dame is going to find a way to keep it close. I think they're tired of hearing and close, a 10-point loss.
Right, but that's close with Alabama these days, with all the teams they played this year.
Right. And so, you know, I think they're just going to be tired of hearing about 2012 and hearing about not being able to play Notre Dame in these big games. And I think they come to play. I think if you can bottle up all that passion, all that excitement, all the stigma that's out there and really want to prove a point, you know, obviously winning would be one way to do that. But, you know, playing a close game and you know, being able to score and being able to do what you've done all year is certainly a great start and something to build on for next year. So I'm going 45-35.
Okay. We're somewhat on the same page there. All right, let's get to the game that I think most of the country is a little more excited for. Now, we did talk with Andrea Adelson on Wednesday, and she says the country's tired of Clemson, they're tired of Ohio State, they're tired of Alabama. I get that. But you know what? The big boys are playing, all right? And even if
it's like, you know, LeBron James, Clemson, yeah, same thing. People are they get tired of greatness. And I
here's
get
the thing.
It. I get
it. Are you tired of it? Okay. Look me in the eye and tell me you're not watching.
Exactly.
How about that?
That's right.
Okay. So let's start with Ohio State, because I think there's been a lot of questions. You know, we debated forever. Should they be in? Blah, blah, blah. You and I, like, I think we're both okay with them being in. We have some problems with just the, you know, the message it sends and the fact they only played six games, blah, blah, blah. But I agreed with what David Hale said on Wednesday. I think that the fact that they've only played six games is a disadvantage, because Clemson always peaks around game 12, 13, 14. That's just how they work. Now, Ohio State, they generally, we've seen their Purdue loss, the Iowa loss, those losses come around game 7, 8, 9. So I would argue Ohio State peaks later in the season as well. Mac, you've played in these big games. You've seen the difference in a team between six games and 12. Is this going to be an advantage or a disadvantage for Ohio State?
Yeah, and this is a question that I've really, you know, pondered, similar to, you know, does Notre Dame have a chance? I've really been thinking about the fact that, you know, Ohio State only has those six games. And is that a good thing for them? Is it a bad thing for them? Is it any type of advantage, disadvantage at all? And really what I have come down to is, number one, yes, they're going to be fresher. That's common sense. They don't have the same wear and tear. They don't have the same, you know, physical battles. You look at the games that they missed. Some of them would have been, you know, nice physical matchups that would have, you know, stressed and put stress on your bodies that they didn't have. Now, another thing that I think, like you just said, is this Ohio State team hasn't been able to peak. They haven't been able to fully come together and be the best version of themselves. So I think when you look at that and when you see the fact that there's still things that could be growing, there's still things that players even that could be developing and gaining more confidence, and offensive line coming together, bringing more cohesion that we haven't really seen from them this year. Does that happen at game 10? Does that happen at game 9? And so Ohio State will never even get that chance. As you mentioned on the last podcast, if they went out, they're 8-0. I mean, it's an 8-0 national I mean, just crazy to think about. So I just think it's honestly a push. I think there's positive and negatives that, honestly, it's right down the middle in terms of how you want to look at it. Now, we'll come to see. I mean, if we come out there and see one team, you know, just absolutely out physical the other or different things of that nature, then you could say, sure, that they were fresh, they're feeling good. Or the other side, they're not a full team yet. They're not who they are. So I'm right in the middle on it, which maybe is a chicken way out. But, you know, I truly think it's going to have both ups and downs for them.
Well, we've never seen it. So we
right.
don't know.
That's true. It's never happened before.
So it's a fair point, Mac. I really don't know. I think I would prefer to be in Clemson's boat where, you know, you and I both know this. Like it takes a while. And when you're peaking, it's a great feeling and you know it.
Yeah.
And you can feel that. And I don't believe Ohio State is. I think a lot of Clemson fans are wondering this, Mac, and you're the perfect person to ask. I want to say, you know, besides the injuries on the defense, which this defense looks healthy and they look great, the biggest concern for a lot of Clemson fans has been the lack of a go and get it receiver, which EJ Williams is emerging as that, but then also the O-line in general, and talking about peaking and building chemistry and building consistency and growing. What have you seen from this O-line, and how confident are you that they can continue to improve and possibly play their best football in this playoff?
Yeah, well you look at who they are with you know, other players back, right? With Trevor being back and him just instilling confidence in everybody, making everybody feel better, you know, more confident about playing. His ability in the run game just alleviates a lot of different stresses. You have people who, you know, instead of like we saw from Notre Dame the first time, just screaming downhill to attack the run, now they have to sit back a little bit and see what is going to happen. What is Trevor going to do? Because if we miss, he's gone. So I think all of those different factors coming in and the fact that Clemson, I believe, is peaking right now, like you just mentioned, and I think they know that. I think there is that confidence up front and those guys feeling better and feeling like, hey, look, we're one of the best teams in the country. We need to play like it, and we need to move this line of scrimmage. That's going to be a very important part. If you remember a year ago in this game, it was a very, very slow start for Clemson, not being able to move the ball, wide receivers on the outside being pressed. Really physical job by Ohio State and their defensive backs. So I think that those guys up front and Travis and you know, Trevor are going to want to establish the run early. You know, now if they can, that's a certainly a different story. You know, I think Ohio State has one of the best linebacking cores in the country. I think they have three dudes that are really, really solid. And then a defensive tackle who, you know, by Pro Football Focus is ranked number one in the nation. So he's a guy that can rush the passer, stuff the run, and, you know, do anything that you ask him. So they're going to have a challenge, but it certainly is not the front that we saw a year ago. There's no Chase Young. There's other defensive tackles missing. So do I think it's going to be easier? Maybe that's not the right word, but I do expect to see, you know, better movement and more effectiveness in the run game from Clemson.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree. What about Justin Fields? Justin Fields is such a puzzling case this year. Because going into the season, people were saying, oh, and, you know, people, we always get tired of the guy that's been consistent for 3 years. So saying, well, you know, Justin Fields could overtake Trevor. He could be the number one pick. That looks kind of ridiculous now. But I heard Tom Luginbill say this, Mac, on ACC Network, that there is no one whose draft stock can benefit more or decrease more from this game today than Justin Fields. What do you expect to see from Justin Fields? Or do we know what to expect? Because is he injured? And what's going on with him? And the fact that he hasn't really been able to peak yet with his guys. He's had receivers out. I don't really know what to expect from Justin Fields in this game.
It's going to be interesting to see, no doubt. And I think when you hear Luginbill say that, and a guy who, you know, has had a really solid career and has put up unbelievable numbers, you saw a year ago.
Heisman finalist last year.
Right. And so I think that, you know, maybe saying that maybe a little far-fetched to say one game can you know, drastically decrease these different things. But then in that same kind of thought process, I'm looking on, you know, Mel Kiper's top athletes, and he now has Zach Wilson ahead of him. So he has Zach Wilson, quarterback from BYU, as QB2 now.
Wow.
So it is certainly something that from a media perspective. Now, look, none of us are drafting anybody, and we can say all we want. These scouts, these NFL personnel, they know who they want and who they're going to
get. They haven't given us a team yet, Mac. We're lobbying.
That's true. So I think when you look at all that and you look at Justin Fields and just, you know, when he gets in these big games, it's just different. He has seven turnovers in the last seven games. When you look at, and I say that it's a little misleading. He has definitely multiple interceptions in three of those, but it's something that when he plays a legit defense, it's different. And the ball comes out different. He hesitates to throw downfield. Guys aren't wide open. And so those tough, tight window throws, sometimes the other team comes down with it. So it's going to be interesting to see. I'm very interested to see the thumb injury and how much that's going to affect him, whether it's throwing the ball downfield, his accuracy, his touch, you know, what is going to be affected by that, if anything at all. And then I think something that's going to be different from a year ago is his mobility. You know, his knee should be fine. His lower body should be fine. How much of a factor is that going to now play into this offensive attack going against Clemson?
It's a very good point. Okay, before we get to our predictions, we do need to address the elephant in the room. The fact that Tony Elliott has tested positive for COVID, which of course we send him our T's and P's, and Dabo says that he's feeling fine, he doesn't have symptoms, so that's all very good. Kind of crazy that I'm assuming, you know, maybe over Christmas, we were all seeing family to a certain extent. It could have happened to anyone. So, Mac, you have a unique perspective. You've been in this Clemson offense. Now, Chad Morris was the play caller for most of your career. Who was the play caller for you guys in 15? Was it Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott?
It was Tony and Jeff. But here's the interesting part is it's kind of happened before. And when you look at 2014 and you look at the bowl game, Chad Morris accepted the job. SMU took the head coaching job at SMU. And so we had a first game coordinator, and it was Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott. And so we had two new guys, first time ever calling plays, first time being coordinators, and we absolutely housed Oklahoma. We put up 40 plus points. We scored on the first play of the game. Anything that we wanted to do, we could offensively. Now, look, this is a much different circumstance. This is a playoff, and this is a much better team, so we think, in Ohio State. But the players are still there. You know, coaches, I truly believe coaching matters, but at the end of the day, Coaches don't miss tackles. Coaches don't make glorious catches. They don't make any throws. So certainly it's going to be different, and certainly it's going to have some type of impact, whether it's in the flow of the game, something that Coach Elliott would have done differently, or just overall Coach Elliott's poise and his calmness, and a guy that is always level-headed no matter what happens, whether it's a super high or a super low adversity. You know, he's the same guy and isn't rattled. So now that you have a new guy, we assume going to be, you know, Coach Streeter, the quarterback's coach. How is he going to do in those situations? If Clemson is down 16-0, like they were a year ago, is he panicking? Is he trying to take shots? Is he trying to get them back in this game? I don't think so. I mean, Coach Sweeney does such a great job of having these contingency plans, these what-if plans. And he said this year more than ever that, you know, they've been prepared for anything. If any coach, if any player, if any staff member goes down, there's A, B, C, D ready to go. And he had to break that glass case and pull that plan out. And here we are. But, you know, Coach Streeter has been an offensive coordinator before. He's called plays. He's the quarterback coach. So there shouldn't be any lack of comfort from a quarterback perspective with Trevor. And you think of, it's not like the NFL. There's not coach's voice in their helmet. So everything is going to be pretty much the exact same for Trevor. He's going to look to the sideline. He's going to look at the play call from, you know, the fourth string quarterback, and he's going to move on, and he's going to have the ability to check out of things if he wants to. So I don't think it's going to be a huge deal. I think Coach Streeter is more than competent. I think that he is, it's almost going to be, Kelly, you know, for all our, you know, Clemson fans listening, it's going to be an audition, because we assume that Coach Elliott is going to move on and be a head coach one day. You've got to think that Brandon Streeter is going to be the next man up, and this is going to be a good little sample size, you know, for Clemson fans and really everybody paying attention to Clemson of what's to come, you know, when Elliott decides to leave.
Just thrown in the fire. I do assume the game plan was already set. The call sheet was already set, and we just feel bad for Tony Elliott, of course, because, you know, he was ready to go here. And I think his poise, that's a great point, Mac. Tony Elliott is one of the most level-headed. You never see him get really excited or mad. He's very level-headed.
The same. And I mean, he's a genius. He really is. I mean, he's an engineer off the field, one of the best play callers on it, a great, great man. I mean, had the privilege to obviously play for him. So it's certainly something from that aspect that you know, people are going to miss. But once the ball snapped, I mean, everything kind of, you know, it goes out the window.
As respected as Tony is, it's not Brent Venables. Now,
right.
That would have been...
that would be a little concerned. And I don't know who would be calling the plays if he was out. I'm not sure who would be the next man up there. But you're right. You're right in saying that.
Okay. Score prediction time, Mac. I'll go first again. Ladies first. And then, Mac, you will, you'll finish us off here. My score prediction for this game. I think it's going to be... Look, last year you talked about it. It was kind of sloppy early. And it was slow. And Clemson got down, but Ohio State didn't look that great either. Justin Fields threw two picks. I think that was the biggest issue down the stretch. And then Trevor ran for 100 yards. I think it's going to be a little less sloppy. I think Clemson is just clicking and playing really well. But I respect Ohio State in terms of Justin Fields with Olave and Wilson. I think those guys are going to be able to do some things and get behind some of Clemson's corners, especially Nolan Turner not there as a safety valve in the first half. So I think it's close, but I think Clemson wins it. My score prediction is Clemson 38. Ohio State 27.
Ooh, I like that. But that's not enough points for Clemson. They're going to score more. I think when you look at it, you talk about the sharpness, you talk about starting fast. And one of the key differences in this year and last year is Ohio State's pass defense. These guys are not the same dudes out there that they had a year ago. Two first round picks, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, defensive backs in Arnett and Jeff Okuda. They're gone. And so this Ohio State team just isn't the same. They're 104th in the country in passing offense. Clemson is third amongst Power 5 teams, only behind Bama and Florida in regards to passing offense. So Ohio State, even who they play, they haven't seen anything close to this passing attack that is going to be coming from Trevor Lawrence and the Tigers. With that in mind, I think Trevor's going to carve him up. I really do. I think that Clemson's going to be able to get to Fields, get him down on the ground for sacks, for tackles for loss. I think we're going to see a really complete performance from Clemson. So I would not be shocked at all if we see something like 42-17 at the end of this game. I really think Clemson's going to roll.
42-17. And I said this on Wednesday, guys. Mac predicts blowouts, and first, not all the time, but he predicts blowouts for certain Clemson games.
When I do, they kind of happen.
And I look at him like, okay. And then they happen. All right. So he has a way.
Hey, but look, we'll come on this pod Monday and I'll say I'm an idiot if I was dead wrong. But I just, guys, when I watch the tape and I see, you know, what I do from that Ohio State defense, they're not stopping Clemson. It's just not the same as last year. There's no doubt.
You heard it here first. All right, that was our Sunshine Beverages College Football Playoff Big Games Breakdown. Enjoy a can of sunshine and have all the natural feel-good energy you need. Remember, they're available at Publix, at QT. I've seen them at QT. And online at drinkthesunshine.com. Use our promo code ACC10 at checkout for 10% off.
Guys, thanks for listening. That was such a fun episode. Cannot wait to watch these playoff matchups. It's going to be a fun afternoon and evening, and then can't wait to talk about it on Monday. If you haven't already, go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, drop us a little 5-star rating, write us a review. It's always fun to hear from you guys. We greatly appreciate that. But until next time, we'll see y'all.